We're going to begin this hour by talking about the economy in North Carolina and specifically the state of employment in North Carolina. Recently, the North Carolina Justice Center released its State of Working NC report. This year, it's called Equity in Employment. You can get the full report at ncjustice.org, talking about the state of employment, the state of the economy, where things stand, what isn't so good, and how it can be improved. One of the co-authors of the report is Patrick McHugh from the North Carolina Justice Center, and he joins us here in the studio to break it down. Patrick, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, absolutely. Good to see you again, Aaron.
And it's a 40-page document. I was reading it earlier today. Again, everyone listening, you can go to the website, which is ncjustice.org, and download it whenever you want. It being a dense document, we're not going to be able to cover everything, but give us the rundown. We still talk today about the economy being generally strong, but there are a lot of factors that are not so good, and a lot of us as individuals have this experience of, oh, we hear these stories in the news about the economy is great. Why do I personally feel like I'm still struggling? What's going on?
Well, to crib Mark Twain, you know, there are lies, damn lies, and the headline unemployment rate. and that's, you know, that's unfortunately the story that is so often getting lost in the mix. And I think a lot of folks have kind of fallen into this kind of reflexive knee-jerk, oh, the headline unemployment rate is low, so therefore everything must be hunky-dory. And obviously we've got a lot of elected leaders that are all too happy to play into that narrative and say, oh, everything's great. But as you say, a lot of folks look around and say, well, that doesn't really describe the world I'm living in. I still haven't gotten much of a raise over the last decade. I may not be able to find a decent job. I may still be out of work for a long period of time between jobs. I may not be able to find full-time employment. And that's what this report really breaks down. And not just that that's true across the board, but that a lot of folks are really living in very different economies, that a lot of the structural barriers that particularly communities of color and folks with lower levels of education and people who live in certain regions of the state, particularly outside of some of the metropolitan areas, the economic reality on the ground there looks very, very different than it does for, you know, a white, well-educated person living in Raleigh with lots of, you know, professional business job opportunities. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole, when you dig underneath the headline unemployment rate, you see a whole host of problems that really say that all of the fundamental economic challenges that we had before the Great Recession are really still with us. Mm-hmm. And none of them have actually gone away. And in fact, many of them are far worse today than they were before 2007.
One of the things that the report starts out by talking about is the concept of underemployment, which I think anyone who's been following the debates about the economy has heard that concept, that people are employed, but they're working maybe part-time instead of full-time. They're not working in kind of the full-time jobs that you think they would be. So that's one concept. Another concept, though, that the report discusses, and this is something that I wasn't as familiar with, is unstable employment, which is people kind of bouncing between jobs without being permanently employed. Say more about that.
And I think this is, again, a continuation of the erosion of the concept of stable employment, that you get a job, you have an employer, you have a stable relationship with that employer, that you have career prospects.
For decades.
Right? Yeah. You know, and unfortunately, I think we kind of move past that expectation that you would be with one company for a whole career decades ago. But the trend has continued where many people are finding themselves trapped in these really marginal jobs, whether it's a minimum wage job where, for example, I mean, here's one of the things I think a lot of folks who have, you know, a nice stable salaried position don't understand. A lot of people have absolutely no control over the hours that they work from one week to the next. Mm-hmm. And even if they stay with the same employer for a long period of time, they may be getting up every single day, not sure when they're going into work, how many hours they're going to have. And that creates both a huge amount of financial uncertainty, because, of course, most of those are hourly rate jobs. So if you get cut on a shift, you're not going to be taking home the money that you were counting on. And there's some emerging research that shows it's not just an economic hardship for those folks. it creates a huge amount of psychological burden that creates some really terrible long-term health and psychological wellness outcomes. So even if you're on top of the reality of just scraping to get by financially, the simple uncertainty of not knowing when you're going to be at work, how many hours you're going to get, trying to work your kids around that, trying to work the rest of your schedules around that, particularly folks that say are reliant on public transportation, mm-hmm. not knowing whether they're going to be able to get to and from work in the hours that they're being given. There's a huge weight to that. And unfortunately, more and more people are getting trapped in those kinds of jobs, the ladders out of those kinds of positions. Many of them gotten pulled up or destroyed altogether. And again, that's one of those things that in the headline unemployment rate, that person's counted as employed, mm-hmm. even if they don't know whether one week they're going to work 30 hours and the next week they're going to work 15.
I would assume that's got a lot to do with just the fact that we've transitioned as an economy more and more into the service sector, right?
It has a lot to do with transitioning into the service sector. That's absolutely true. It also has to do with a long-term trend of employers essentially putting more of the risk of the employee-employer relationship onto the employees. Mm-hmm. And so we just talked about the sort of uncertain work schedule. A whole other trend in this is sort of temp work, and both temp and gig work, mm-hmm. where you're the employee with temp work, you know, the employers are contracting out to temp agencies rather than just hiring people. They're saying, well, I'd rather not have to deal with being accountable to the folks that I'm hiring. I'm just going to contract it out to a temp agency and have them do that work, which again shifts that. There's risk there in hiring somebody because you're trying to figure out whether the workflow is going to match the demand and whether you're going to have to bring people on and let them off. And so that's another example of where through temp work and gig work, employers are increasingly shifting the risk onto their employees. Mm-hmm. And that's true certainly in the service sector, but it extends far beyond the service sector.
I was just thinking about the professions. We were talking before we started that I teach a class at Durham Tech. I adjunct, and so do a lot of other people mm-hmm. now, because just in higher education, tenure track jobs are in decline. The role of academia as a career is in decline, and a lot of those college classes are being taught by people who, like you say, are on that class-by-class basis.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And it shows how many people are in some ways in the same boat, mm-hmm. even if there are, mm-hmm. there are distinctions otherwise in terms of their pay or their education level. In a lot of cases, folks that have a college degree are in a much more similar economic and employment set of relationships to folks that may have less than a high school education than was true in the past.
What is the report? We're speaking, by the way, with Patrick McHugh, North Carolina Justice Center, ncjustice.org for more information. We're talking about the State of Working NC report. You can download it in full on the website. What about wages? What does the report find when it comes to that? Because, again, you see some headlines saying wages have been stagnant for 10 years. You see others saying they're starting to come back up. What did you find?
Well, there has been a modest uptick in wages over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, wages are still flatlined or down compared to historical norms. Here in North Carolina, one of the distressing trends, or non-trends really, is that for decades from the Second World War up through the 1970s and 80s and early 90s, the gap in wages between North Carolina and the nation was closing. We were mm-hmm. catching up. But that progress has essentially stalled out. I mean, there's been some up and down since then, but we're still substantially below the national average when it comes to wages. And the progress there has really stalled out. Another thing that's, I think, important to recognize about wages, and this kind of goes back to the conversation we were previously having, you know, there's a lot of folks, particularly when we talk about employment barriers that face people of color or women or other communities that have often been pushed to the economic sidelines. Mm-hmm. There's this narrative out there that just get an education. Mm-hmm. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, just get yourself educated, and then you're going to have your place at the table and everything's going to be hunky-dory. I think one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that the wage gaps between people of color and white workers, or between men and women, they don't actually go away the more education you get. In fact, they get larger. So women and people of color with a bachelor's degree are more underpaid compared to their similarly educated white or male colleagues than people with a high school education. Mm-hmm. Sure, they're earning more than their peers with only a high school education, but they're not actually closing that gap. And so that this is one of the kind of fundamental economic lies that's been told, is that all you need to do is get an education. All these other barriers that folks have faced are going to disappear, and the wage gap is going to disappear with it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking again with Patrick McHugh. So let's turn to the positive side of the report, which is what can we do about it? There's a whole section at the end about solutions, and it struck me as kind of a surprise. The first one that was mentioned on the list was transportation.
This is a big one.
Yeah.
And in some level, it shouldn't come as a surprise, particularly for folks who live in, say, Chapel Hill or Durham, because it comes down to the affordability of housing. Mm-hmm. And one of the distressing trends is that low-income neighborhoods in otherwise prosperous metropolitan regions are getting pushed farther and farther away from where the job centers are. If you look at the sort of change in accessibility to jobs, low-income neighborhoods are actually seeing jobs nearby decrease and pushed farther and farther away. So that's definitely one of those, again, structural challenges that, again, falls more heavily on communities of color than it does on a lot of white communities. Happily, I think this is one of those cases where when we talk about these sorts of things, it can start to feel pretty daunting, that there's this huge system and what am I as an individual going to do to address all of these structural issues? And I'm not going to sit here and say that we just need to snap our fingers and we're going to radically reorganize the economy overnight. But there's stuff that can be done. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole movement towards equitable transit-oriented development where we're pairing public transit, and whether that's light rail or whether that's, you know, bus rapid transit or other forms of public transit, we're pairing that more intentionally with the construction of affordable housing. Mm-hmm. That's something.
Just last hour, we were talking with John Richardson, who's the sustainability director for Chapel Hill. Like, what can the town do to be more environmentally sustainable, affordable housing, and economic development for exactly the mm-hmm. same reason? So mm-hmm. to keep people in a place where they are able to afford to live and work without having to spend a lot of time transporting themselves back and forth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, that's definitely a big one that we should be focusing on because. Yeah. Again, even in some of those places that we would point at and say, oh, well, Chapel Hill's doing great economically, not for everybody. Mm-hmm. But there are solutions that are out there that we can re-knit our economic communities back together.
Other solutions?
So there's a number of other things in the report. Another thing I think that's really a highlight and in some ways a bright spot that deserves to be lifted up is criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. It's incredible the number of barriers, and it's not just if you have a felony conviction, although, of course, that is something that can, even once you paid your debt to society, create really long-standing barriers to employment. But it can be as something as simple as getting a parking ticket that mm-hmm. you can't afford to pay, and then getting your driver's license suspended because you can't afford to pay the fees and court costs associated with that ticket. And then, hey, you're probably going to have to still drive. If you got kids, you got to get to school. If you've got work that you've got to do, you get pulled over, and then you get your driver's license permanently revoked. Mm-hmm. There's a real movement going on in North Carolina and really around the country that is a broad-based movement that includes people from both political parties, from some very different ideological points of view, that looks at this and says, we've got a system that's essentially trapping people in an economic circumstance that we're not responsible for, and that we need to make it far easier for people with a criminal record to be able to get back to work. So one example is the Ban the Box initiative, where there's a number of local governments and the state government is moving in this direction, where rather than asking somebody about their criminal record or lack thereof at the very beginning of the interview process, go through the interview process, figure out whether this is somebody that you're really interested in as an employee, and then decide, okay, let's look at what their record is and make an assessment about whether, if they happen to have something on their record, whether it's really actually relevant to the job that they would be doing or if there's any actual concern there. when you put it at the front end of the process, a lot of people just get scammed and put right out of the process before folks ever find out, oh, this was a long, long time ago, or the type of conviction really is completely immaterial to the work that you'd be doing. So that's a good example of something that can be done. And there's another really exciting body of work that's happening in Durham and a number of other communities where they're going back in to make sure that it's staggering the number of people in North Carolina that have suspended licenses for, again, incredibly minor parking tickets, minor traffic stops. And they just never had the money to pay those off and get trapped in this cycle that, again, prevents them from working. Mm-hmm. That doesn't do anybody any good. So there's a whole movement towards automating and streamlining the process for people to get their driver's licenses back. So that's another great example of what's happening on a positive note.
We're speaking with Patrick McHugh again. ncjustice.org is the website if you want more on the NC Justice Center. And again, we're talking about the State of Working in North Carolina report, which you can download there. I mentioned up top we weren't going to be able to cover everything, and we're now coming to the end. But what else do people need to know about this report, about the issue at large, and where can people get more information?
Well, again, ncjustice.org. There's a lot of great information. This is not.
I'm about to answer that question.
Yes. there's, that's not the only piece that we put out there, and this kind of bundles together a number of the key challenges that we look at. But there's a lot of other research that we've done that goes deeper on both the challenges and the solutions that are out there. I think one of the central, if there's a central takeaway that folks should take from this conversation, it's that we don't need to accept the current economy as it's currently constructed. You know, the past doesn't need to dictate our future, but we have to look clear-eyed at the present if we want to do that. A lot of folks are hurting in this economy. It's not just you. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the narrative that's out there, particularly coming from the president and a number of other elected leaders that want to act like everything is fine, kind of puts it on people as if they individually have failed, that it's their failure. It's the failure of our system and the failure to put in place policies that will really give folks a fair shake in this economy. And so I think that's the central thing, not to take it upon yourself as an individual failure, but to recognize that you're part of a system that is failing too many people, and to not accept it, to demand better than this. We can do better than just having a low headline unemployment rate. We need an economy that actually works for more folks.
The report is called Equity and Employment. It's the State of Working NC report. Download it and get more info at ncjustice.org. Patrick McHugh, as always, thank you so much.
Of course.